time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Woohoo! It's July 2nd of the July 4th week. We're excited to have you all here with us. Got a good lineup of our regulars, and I'm excited to hear what they have to share with you. But we're excited about having you, our listeners, here. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we are so thrilled and honored to have you as our listener. Our commitment, of course, is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. Today in our Hot Topic segment, the second half of the program, is with Scott Gordon, CEO of Open Mortgage. And we're going to be discussing four strategies that can increase your volume in a declining market, increasing your income. And actually can kind of actually impact your volume. Volume and income kind of go hand in hand, but they don't necessarily have to. Like that as a teaser going, huh, I thought all income came from volume. Yes, but some products do give you better income than other products. We're going to talk about that. Before we begin, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors. So big thank you out to MBA, the Mortgage Bankers Association, and their Mortgage Action Alliance. If you're not signed up for it, do so. Arch MI, the creative, innovative RateStar program, as well as Black Knight, the leading provider of integrated software and data analytics solutions. And go listen to last week's podcast. Shelley Leonard knocked it out of the park last week. We are getting more downloads on what they're doing. If you thought Black Knight was some sleepy old company, think again. Shelley's the head of the product development team, and there are some things happening there that you have got to pay attention to. Of course, we've got Open Mortgage, leading buyer of reverse mortgages, and I kind of got a little hint there of what we're going to talk about later on in the program, as well as a great home for the top producers in the marketplace. If you're looking for a new home, get old Open Mortgage, our first mortgage company that's a sponsor of the program, and we're thrilled to have him here with us. CardTap, a complete mobile app marketing suite for sales professionals. Check it out at our website, as well as Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. These two fine co-ops really allow you to connect with members in a more intimate way, as well as vendors. Both of them have, their summer conferences that are coming up. Check it out at their website. You can go to the Mortgage Collaborative. Check that one out. Or Lenders One. Put Lenders One Summer Conference or Mortgage Collaborative Summer Conference. See what the lineup is. I'll be attending, we're going to be in Salt Lake at the Lenders One Conference, looking for as close to the mountains as this summer as you can. Mortgage Collaborative is up in Chicago. Both fine organizations. We're proud to be affiliated with both of them. By the way, the Mortgage Collaborative, we recorded an upcoming podcast. That's going to be an upcoming one on July 16th. That is going to be really interesting about technology development. Also want to say a special thank you to Velma, the efficient mortgage marketing email platform, as well as my friend Ken Perry at KnowledgeCoop, making training fun through videos. A great program. Also, special thank you goes to Tom Slyker at Broad Street Consulting, Vidyard for their video production distribution, Predictive, which is a lead gen company that is really making a difference in getting business to you and the kind of business you want. And we finally want to say a thank you to Alice, Andy, Joe, Alan, for their contributions to this podcast. All right, take a breath, Dave, and let's listen to what Rob Van Rapphorst has for us with the MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob, what you got, friend?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, HUD Secretary Ben Carson testified before the full House Financial Services Committee. It was an oversight hearing examining current policies at HUD. The key issues Carson addressed were modernizing HUD's IT infrastructure, program funding at HUD, and the impact of the recent regulatory relief bill, S-1255. Also last week, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac announced update requirements for their Uniform Closing Disclosures reporting program. Lenders will now need to provide several additional data points from the closing disclosure. The GSEs stated that previous requirements from the seller version of the disclosure have been eliminated. These changes will go into effect next year. And finally, MBA's weekly mortgage application survey showed that the average contract interest rate for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage increased to 4.84%. Thanks for joining us for this week's Mortgage Minute.
Yeah, good job. I tell you, if you're part of the MBA, you're part of something special because that organization does some amazing things. I just wanted to also tell you about some other conferences that I'll be speaking at this summer. I'll be in New Orleans, Nalens, speaking at the Ultimate Mortgage Expo. Check it out, as well as Chandler, Arizona on August 2nd. August 24th, my birthday, I'll be speaking twice in Las Vegas at the Originator Connect event. Check out all of these items at mortgageconferences.com, and you can register for them. Are you ready for this? As a listener of this podcast, you get free registration at these conferences. So here's the deal. When you're registering, go to the website, go to mortgageconferences.com. Then you're going to go to the event that you want. And when you're registering, enter the code LYKKEN, L-Y-K-K-E-N, O-C. O-C, does that mean I'm, well, we won't go where O-C means. Anyway, join us. I'm looking forward to seeing you at these conferences. All right, Les Parker is doing always something innovative along with the audio engineer Gary Kent Trebone. So let's see what the macro minute is. It's Les Parker with the TMS Spotlight. And a little bit of a music parody. Well, that's what you got, friend.
Loan Logic's proudly sponsors TM Soundbite.
You know the day destroys the night.
You know the trade destroys the fright. Fright divides the trade. Tried to run, tried to hide. Break on through to the other side.
To the other side.
Who wins between the U.S. and China? Will China, because the U.S. government faces pressure from voters and businesses, making it accountable in the short run and the long run? Will the USA, because of China's centralized form of government with murky and oppressive ways that aggravate the pain of its growing debt? A denuclearized North Korea and fairer trade between the U.S. and China will happen. In the meantime, expect the 10-year Treasury note yield to attack 240. The U.S. and China are enemies in many ways, but they need one another to break on through to the other side. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Boy, yeah, check that out, tmspotlight.com. We've got that up and running. Les Parker does a great job with that. Now, one guy wrote me and says, I listened to that soundbite. I had to go back and listen to it five times to take all the notes that were in all the contents in there. There is so much packed into that one-minute little recording. I encourage you to go back to our website, lickitonlending.com. Go over to the second item over. Go down, listen to Les or Les's webpage, and you'll see all of those that you can listen to. Very interesting. Good job. Well, let's run over to one of our sponsors, who happens to be in the Hot Topic segment, and listen to Scott Gordon talk about sales science. I like this. Listen.
Scott Gordon here with a bit of sales science. Are you an authority figure? Behavioral scientists have discovered that people are much more likely to follow a person who is perceived as an expert. There's an important word you may have missed, perceived. Studies have been conducted to prove it. Physical therapy patients are more likely to exercise if their therapist has their degrees or certificates displayed on their wall. People are likely to pay a stranger for access to a parking spot if the stranger is dressed in a uniform. The therapist's credentials carry an air of expertise, while the parking lot officer is more an authority than an expert. The effect is more powerful when a third person introduces the expert. Even if the third party is directly associated with the expert, it doesn't affect perception. A group of realtors found that having their receptionist list each realtor's accomplishments before transferring customers to the realtor, their business increased drastically, 20% increase in appointments, and 15% increase in signed contracts. So ask yourself, how can I structure my connections and referrals so that I'm introduced as the expert? Instead of giving your cell number to every contact, why not use your receptionist like the realtors? Let him or her introduce your expertise and authority. Or use an answering service. They can talk you up before forwarding your now impressed clients. If this sounds too good to be true, it's not. It's just the science of sales.
I like that. Good job, Scott. That is good. Another one of those things. What I love about advertisers and when they're more interested about providing you information, they're givers. There's a great book called The Go-Givers. Scott is reading it again. I'm reading it again. If you want a good book, and that's what this is about, giving out information. Good job, Scott. And also, some great information. Why not get to work for a company that can help you grow your business through understanding the science of sales? Check it out, openmortgage.com. Well, Joe Farr, good to have you on here. What are you going to be doing for 4th of July? Anything fun and exciting?
Dave, I'm just going to try to stay out of the heat.
Sounds like you live in Central Texas where we do.
Yeah.
Andy and I do. Yeah, that's a good plan. Anyway, what you got in the markets for us? The market's going to be hot?
Yeah, well, we'll see. You know, they're closed on Wednesday, so it won't be due to something going on in the market. So today, MBS prices are about flat. They opened a little higher, but have drifted lower much of the morning. Construction spending came out this morning in May. The construction spending was pretty much as expected. ISM manufacturing came out. It's ordinarily an important economic event, and it was significantly higher than expected. But that was considered skewed somewhat due to disruption in the deliveries of manufactured goods, and that was viewed as a reaction to the tariff issues that are going on right now. So even though it was better than expected, it had a little bit to do with an abnormality in the process, and so the positive effect had very little effect on, or the positive number had very little effect on the market. Looking at last week, Dave, mortgage rates improved a little bit, continued an improvement that started in the middle of June. So over the last few weeks, a couple weeks of June, we saw a nice improvement in mortgage rates. During the same time, we saw a fall in stock. So as we mentioned last week, it was a little surprising that there wasn't an immediate reaction to a change in the stock market, in the bond market. But, you know, when you back up and look at it on a little larger basis, there does seem to be some correlation to where when the stock market falls, mortgage rates fall along with it, or fall some anyway. Looking at the economic data that came out last week, it was a little bit mixed. We had consumer confidence and consumer sentiment from May. Both fell a little bit, and those two are being...
That was a surprise.
Well, there are disruptions associated with trade concerns. People are hearing all about that, and they're seeing a drop in stocks. And so it makes a little sense that the immediate reaction would be a drop in confidence in some way. Pending home sales fell again, this time due to a lack of inventory, as was last month. And then the final revision to the first quarter GDP came out, and it was revised lower again. This time it ended up at 2% even. Yeah, it's nice to see that a big pickup is expected to have occurred during the second quarter, and we'll see the first look at that later in the month of July. Core PC rose a little bit more than expected. It reached 2% for the first time in 6 years. As you know, that's what the Fed looks at, and percent is their objective. They have said that they are comfortable letting it run above 2% for a while, so it may not have an immediate impact on their policy, but it's certainly a move in a direction that will get their attention. Yeah. Personal income continues to improve. It's averaged so far this year on a year-over-year basis 4.7%. That's compared to last year at this time of 3.3%. So it's a nice increase in personal income. Looking at the week ahead, looking at this week, there's a few important economic events on the calendar. On Thursday at 10 Eastern time, ISM Services Index will be released. And then also on Thursday at 2, the minutes of the June 13th Fed meeting will be released. Now, since that meeting had a press conference following it, it's hard to imagine that there's a whole lot more to glean from the minutes as to what happened at that meeting, but we've said that in the past, right? And it's been
things
that have caused the market to move. And then on Friday, the jobs report comes out. 195 net new jobs are expected. The unemployment rate is expected to remain at 3.8%. And that's it.
Well, that is good stuff. I mean, I'm looking at where this market's going. It's interesting the Feds are going to let this rise and run a little bit above 2%. I think that's good, so it's going to probably keep it in there. But higher rates are coming. Might as well get used to it, folks. Joe, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast for so long and continuing on for, you know, who knows, as long as we both got breath in us, we're going to be doing this. Appreciate it, man. Let's go run over and listen to our friends at Knowledge Coop. Nathan's got an update for us. Nathan?
At the Knowledge Coop, we work hard to create training that engages and encourages our audience. Once people are engaged in training, they are more likely to stay focused and retain the information that they need to know. So here's your training tip for the week. Next time you have an important policy or bit of knowledge you need to train, do it in short clips and make sure you sprinkle it in with a little bit of humor. Video training is highly impactful, but only when done in the way we've been conditioned through TV. Videos should be no more than 5 minutes, should get to the point, and humor should be sprinkled through to emphasize the important points. Memories are more powerful when attached to an emotion. If you need help with your company's training, please reach out to us at knowledgecoop.com, and we'd be happy to assist. And that's your training minute from the Knowledge Coop, which strives for easy and fun training for the mortgage industry powered by a smart digital platform.
Good job. Check it out, knowledgecoop.com. These guys do a great job on their training. Best of all, they use videos, and they use it in a way that I think you guys should be paying attention to. So check it out. Nathan, thank you so much for your input. I just got some text messages in. It cracks me up about the dogs barking in the background. One person says, sounds like the dogs are, or the markets are going to the dogs with the dog barking in the background. That was just perfect. I thought that was hilarious. Anyway, Alice Alvey, good to have you here with us each and every week. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Dave. I am sitting, looking out at Mosquito Lake in Ohio, so I'm happy to be by the water.
But I don't know if it's, it's Mosquito Lake. Well, hopefully it's not living up to its name.
That's right, yeah. Well, it's a good 7,000 acres, which is virtually huge for Ohio. So, well, it's huge by a lot of standards. So, anyway, we're doing great. Starting the 4th of July off early, but wouldn't miss the show for anything. So,
are you out in the fishing boat with your husband? Andy loves to fish, and as well, I was wondering, because I know you've worked and done things from the boat while he's fishing. That would be just too funny. That's a splash of water in the background.
He dropped me off at shore. I got dropped off on the shore. They took off there fishing, my husband and my brother-in-law, and I'm standing in my fishing gear, ready to go back out and get another bass.
That is too funny. That is hilarious. So anyway, well, that's awesome. I love it. Hanging with the guys. That's cool.
Well, here's a quick update. And I'll be on for the whole show, because I know they've gone out anyway. But I think one of the things I've been checking into is this new house bill that came up, H.R. 5993. And essentially, the bills, when they first get presented, you're never sure if it's going to go anywhere. It's just someone trying to make a statement for an election. But essentially, this is specifying current False Claims Act statute of limitations, which is 6 years from the time of the event and 3 years from when you have material information. I'm sure an attorney would tear apart my wording for not being perfectly correct, but you all get the gist, right? So there's definitely some limitations out there, and this one seems to want to be pulling in FHA, VA, and RD and make that same False Claims Act very specific to anything related to insuring claims, VA guarantee, and claims on your RD insurance. So I think that's interesting to watch. It's not asking for anything different in the false claims, but it's looking to make sure that these would apply in the insuring and guarantee process, which I think is important because we all know there's a few cases out there that have really dragged on for a long time for some lenders or have been brought up very late after the fact. And so we'll definitely watch this, try and get to the bottom of the source. But that's the one bill that we're going to put on our radar and see if anything happens. Another quick thing is just, I think as you heard on the MBA Minute, your UCD went into effect June 25th. So I'm making sure all of that is going well for you guys. And then, hold on 1 second, Fannie Mae and their condos. So Fannie Mae made some changes to the condominium rules. They actually lightened them up, so you definitely want to pay attention to this. There's a couple items in there that are a little risky, like lightening up on co-ops and, having some greater percentage of ownership. I'm sorry. Looking at my notes here, and erasing as my mouse isn't working right. And allowing for manufactured homes to, be in a condo as well. So, just take a look at them closely. Arch MI, I know, was one MI company that excluded some of the factors. So check your MI providers. They may not be adopting all of the condo changes that Fannie put into place, too. But just some interesting things that came out, and you want to make sure that you're on the cutting edge of making sure you're taking the condos and everybody else. So, Dave, that's my quick report for today.
Good. Quick report, and you're doing it lakeside while on vacation. Your husband dropped you off. We spent a wonderful time together. Was it a 4th of July we were out in Torch Lake that one time? It was so wonderful. We enjoyed it immensely. We appreciate you, Alice. Be sure to say hi, Andy. And yes, definitely want you to participate all the way through. And again, kudos to your team there at Union Home acquiring yet another company. How cool is that? All right, folks, we're going to be right back with a word from Motivity Solutions. And then we've got, waiting in the wings, Alan Pollock. He will be here with us sharing his latest. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Thank you, David, very much. Great to be here, as always. And this week, we have another underwriting-focused key performance indicator. And the KPI is average resubmits per file. This single measurement can not only help lenders develop consistency in underwriting and optimize departmental processes, it can also guide business users to examine contributing tasks in processing that affect this number. KPIs in practice, and you might say by definition, are constantly on display and updated in near real time, making it much easier to pinpoint however many friction points may be combining to produce a given effect, like number of resubmissions, which can also vary by product type, another aspect that the KPI can uncover, demonstrating once again that what gets measured gets results. And with that, Dave, I will turn it back to you. Thanks very much again.
John Maynell, thank you so much for submitting that. And he's working on a whole bunch of new, really exciting, cool KPI ads. Check it out, MotivitySolutions.com. There's so much. I'm going to have them on as a guest. I had a conversation with John this last week in response to a video that I posted up on LinkedIn and on my Facebook page about disruption. And again, it had to do with the energy and the transportation industry, but I'm looking for what are the disruptors happening to our industry. Wow, that conversation was one of those ones I wish I could have recorded and played it for y'all, as they say here in Texas. So anyway, good to have you all here with us. That was so funny. Alan, your mic is on. It's so funny. Alan texted me, that dog barking wasn't mine. It wasn't mine, I promise you. So anyway, that was hilarious, Alan. Good to have you on, friend.
And as they say here in the South, it's y'all's dog, not my dog.
It's y'all's dog, not my dog. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
All right. So this week, we're going to start with some positive news. Everybody's talking about ROI with digital mortgage and how do we get ROI out of all of our investment. First American Financial Corp announced that their application, so their loan application defect index for purchase transactions decreased by 4.6% compared to the prior month and is now down 7.8% compared to a year ago. So what does that tell us? It tells us that all the investment we're making and data validation and third-party data services and using that down the line for rules and data is definitely working. In addition, there's been some great information, David, going on, you know, everyone's investing in their digital mortgage solution, but two folks that we really haven't heard from lately, one of them, Simple Nexus, they raised $20 million in growth capital this past week. They're spending time and energy on a more well-rounded digital solution. And, you know, a lot of people have been talking about Optimal Blue. What's new with their digital mortgage front?
Yeah.
What's going on over there? Well, 2 weeks back, Optimal Blue partnered with Capsilon. They've had a lot of press releases. You can Google them and check it out. But most recently, their digital mortgage experience, they're saying, is going to be highly accurate, real-time product eligibility and pricing content. And, you know, that's some of my background is in that area. And I think it's interesting because you have a lot of data on the front end, but when you have the information, the eligibility, the more of that asset income and the better you can validate the borrower, the better eligibility you can provide them, which is real-time pricing. So I thought that was interesting. We've also got a lot of stuff going on with Blend. And, you know, just to point out two things that I think everybody would be very interested on. The first one is Fannie Mae just approved Blend as the first end-to-end digital mortgage platform for its day one certainty on Tuesday.
Oh, really?
Tuesday. Interesting. Yeah, Tuesday going back a week. And they're going to, you know, they're going to be approved to provide asset verification reports for DU, so integrated directly. And it means that, you know, reduce cycle times. And also, Blend just made an announcement. You know, a lot of people talk about the digital mortgage and how do you support the wholesale side of the market? Because as a broker, you don't work sometimes with just one investor. You work with many investors. And so how do you provide one seamless process to the borrower if you want to compete with a lot of those other loan officers out there? Well, Blend just made an announcement. They're doing a deal with Caliber Home Loans, Flagstar Bank, and United Wholesale Mortgage for one experience. So as a broker, you have this one platform that connected you directly to these different institutions. That's right. And don't forget, there's lots of stuff going on the digital closing side. eOriginal, back in April, they partnered with Merce Corp. You may have remembered that press release about eNote solutions. Well, now they're helping they're continuing to digitize the closing process, of course. They're enabling settlement agents to seamlessly enter the digital mortgage ecosystem. They're calling it You Can Close with Confidence program. So settlement agents will have actual access to key documents, including eNotes, that will empower the ability to close with confidence. And Pavaso also partnered with OS National. They're a big provider of title and settlement services to deliver a complete closing program. So we're moving forward on the front of digital closings, and I think every week we'll probably have something that we can talk about on that side.
There's
interesting things going on. Yeah, with chatbots, David.
Good.
Everybody's, you know, what do you do with chatbots? So I'm going to provide a link back on the Lickin' on Lending site, but USA Mortgage, they rolled out what they called Jane. It's called Jane.ai, and it's used internally instead of externally for loan officers and in-office support staff working with clients to help get loans closed faster. So that's it for this week.
Jane.
Looking forward to hearing what Scott has to say later.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's Jane. Jane. Okay, well, I won't be doing any singing. But anyway, I can just hear the loan officers having fun with that.
That's right. I'm going to call America's Got Talent for you. That was pretty good.
I don't think they're going to be calling me for an audition. Anyway, it's so good. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Alan, have a great rest.
Thanks, David.
Like you said, I want you involved in the rest of the podcast. We'll talk to Scott about it. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break to hear from Jim Jump of ArchMI. Jim?
Hi, David. ArchMI is happy to be a proud sponsor of the program. Today, I'd like to let your listeners know about RateStar from Arch Mortgage Insurance. RateStar makes it easy to choose what type of mortgage insurance coverage your loan needs. Quotes are delivered in seconds and represent our most competitive ArchMI rates based on the strength and quality of the loan application. That's the power of RateStar. Getting a mortgage insurance quote has never been so powerful or so simple. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, David.
Appreciate it, Jim. Check out ArchMI's app, and they'll get a hold of one of their reps. They've got the best group of MI guys and gals out there across the country, the landscape, helping you. So check them out. Well, I really enjoy them. Well, I love working with them. It's good. Andy Schell, the Prepa Doctor, is in the house.
I see you
with your lab coat on, your stethoscope running around and putting it up against the balance sheet of everyone out there or the P&L going, your leakage is here. You got a heart murmur there. So what you got for us?
That's exactly right. Well, so in this day of margin compression, you know, we're all looking for ways to spend less, make more, and do more with less, be more efficient, drive operational efficiency. So I've had a number of clients have been asking me about organizational design, organizational charts. What's the best design? How many direct reports are enough? How many are the right amount? And so I'm going to start by demystifying a myth. Starting with, how many subordinates should a manager manage? And if you ask people that question, they're probably going to say, well, it's about 7. Well, actually, that's really not correct. It's way more complicated than that, and it really is driven by relationships, interrelatedness, and similarity of positions. So I'm going to give a couple of quick examples. Sometimes 20 direct reports is okay, and sometimes 4 is too many. It all depends upon this notion of interrelatedness, connectivity, and similarity. So the interrelatedness is when one subordinate has a direct effect on another subordinate. So this interrelatedness means that the manager's responsibility is to manage the subordinate and manage the interrelationships between the two subordinates. So that's an additional relationships and has this compounding effect, and it's very significant. This is a quick example. A manager with 4 direct reports and all of the subordinates have dissimilar, interrelated, highly complex positions is in effect managing 20 relationships, not 4.
Wow.
So 4 becomes 20. So here's an example. So a processing manager and the COO of a company. So the processing manager is managing 15 processors because the positions are similar. They're not interrelated. They're complex for mortgage lending, but it's still an understandable arrangement. And assuming there's good communication and highly structured environment, you know, you can have 15. But on the COO side, So let's say the chief operating officer manages the HR department, the IT department, the processing manager, and secondary marketing. So that's four direct reports. So people would go, well, that's not enough. You need to have more. You need three more direct reports. Well, hang on a second. Those four direct reports that the COO has are all complex, dissimilar, and highly interrelated. So the HR department affects IT, IT affects processing, processing affects secondary. So they have to really communicate among themselves effectively, and that's the manager's job. So that COO managing four people has 20 relationships that they have to manage.
Wow.
So this rule of thumb of seven only really applies in a very narrow area. You've got to consider interrelatedness, complexity, and similarity of function to determine the degree to which you're overloaded in your capacity for, it's called span of control, but how many people you can manage. So think about it like span of responsibility. So it's not about the number of people, it's about the number of relationships. And so when we're a processing manager, we don't want for the processors to fight among each other, but otherwise they're pretty independent in their functions. When we are managing the IT department, the HR department, and the secondary marketing department, very dissimilar, very connected between each other, interrelated, and complex. So the manager of those three functions has to be involved between the functions, not just up and down. So it becomes like this circle. The operations, the chief operating officer is managing between them and them directly. So the rule of thumb is 1/3 becomes 12 if it's interrelated and connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's complex.
Right.
So 1/3 is 12 relationships. Whereas if it's not interrelated and it's similar functions like processing, then 1/12 is 12. So it depends. 1/7 may be 7, or 1/7, you know, it could be 42. So you can't just say 7. That's never going to, I mean, sometimes that's going to be right, but most of the time it's not, because you have to consider, what are the three words? Interrelatedness, complexity, and similarity. All three of those dynamics affect organizational chart structure, and so there's actually PhDs articles about all this stuff, and there's formulas that calculate all this stuff. So if you want to hear more about the formulas, shoot me an email. It's fun to talk about, but ultimately it's about effectiveness.
Yeah, that's so true. That's good, Andy. I realize that's really interesting. You can tell you're working on your doctorate. You're just digging deeper and deeper and deeper into really cool
there's
stuff.
There's always the next thing.
Well, and curious minds want to know, and yours is about as curious as they get. Yeah, way to go. I wonder how many PhDs we're going to... When we go to finally bury you, I mean, it's morbid, but I mean, how many things are we going to have behind your name on your tombstone? It's crazy. Three PhDs, this and that. Good stuff, Andy. I really appreciate it. The Profit Doctor, Andy Shell.
Thanks,
get a hold
Dave,
of him at andy@mbs-team.com. Appreciate you, Andy. I look forward to getting your participation in the upcoming discussion. Let's take a quick break. We're going to go out and listen to our friends at Black Knight. Again, go back and listen to that last podcast. That was really, really good. But let's listen to Black Knight and what they've got now about Empower Now.
Mid-market lenders, credit unions, and regional banks often face time and cost constraints when it comes to implementing new technology. The good news is, you don't have to settle for less than the best when selecting a loan origination system. Black Knight is a leading mortgage technology provider and offers an option to install its state-of-the-art Empower LOS in less than 6 months through its Empower Now program. With shorter timelines and lower implementation costs, you can have Empower up and running quickly so you can begin originating more loans. Empower Now is a faster, more cost-effective implementation approach designed specifically for mid-tier financial institutions. With its configurable workflow and business process automation, Empower scales as your loan volume increases, meaning you don't have to change your LOS as your operations grow. Learn more about this game-changing approach to your LOS at blackknightinc.com.
BlackKnightInc.com. Check it out. We've got some more upcoming podcasts with the folks at Black Knight. There is some exciting stuff going on there. Well, I am excited to have a friend, a client, an advertiser, and I could go on and on and on with us today. Scott Gordon, CEO of Open Mortgage. It's a mortgage banking company. They have 90-plus retail offices in 47 states. Open Mortgage excels at the traditional mortgage, but they also are in a top 10 reverse mortgage lender in the nation. We're going to be talking a little bit about that later. Again, I've been working with Scott since 2000, since the second week of me starting consulting in 2001. In fact, Scott and I were sitting here looking at a television as the second airplane went into the World Trade Center on September 11th. I was sitting here and he and I are talking, but we're just really fortunate to have a great relationship, long-standing relationship with Scott. Scott, good to have you here, friend.
Hey, good morning, Big D.
Big D. Appreciate that so much. Let's get into some of the stuff. I want to talk about these four strategies that you're employing very successfully. And one of my favorite ones I point to when I'm talking about you, and I do talk a lot behind your back, dude. I hope you don't mind. But I'm telling everybody your ability to connect with a market and using videos. So talk about connecting and communicating with your desired audience. Give us some insights to what you're doing.
Wow, I didn't see that coming. You know, the funny thing is, would you rather read a paragraph or would you rather have somebody say it to you? I mean,
rhetorical. Yeah, let me see it.
So why wouldn't you want to record a video? Because you know people out there would much rather watch a quick video.
Yeah, so true. It's so true. And then it's what you say in it. And I think that's one of the things that you do. So when you're creating these videos, Scott, give our audience some insights. I mean, how much preparation? I've been in your studio. First, you have a full studio there, green screen studio. So anyone looking at those things, actually what's behind him is a green sheet or a green wall, and he has lighting on it. But here's the deal. You see a lot of videos out there, and you don't have to have a full production facility like you do, that you can turn it. It's about the message. Talk about what you do to prepare as you're thinking about giving a message. I've watched you do it. It's really good.
Well, it's funny. I was going to correct you because I thought you were going down the channel of it's great to have tilt pan zoom video cameras and, you know, all the lighting and all that.
That's all sitting in the corner because you've bought it all. I think you bought it all.
Well, and it's great. And it's great to have Coy, who edits my videos now. But you don't need any of that. Last week I was in Montana with the family. I wanted to tape one video, and then an idea popped in my head after I got drenched on a mountain trail. So I did another video, and then I realized that I should have a spare. So by a river, I taped a spare. So if you've got an iPhone or an Android phone, you can tape a video anywhere. The thing I think I've found over the years, now that I've done 700 or 800, is just to know what you want to say before you start. In fact, I taped one of my sons did a school project, and he wanted me to videotape him. And I said, all right, let's do a dry run through. And he wouldn't do it. He said, just start taping. And we ended up having to retape and retape and retape. Whereas if he had just spoken it out loud, standing in the living room, and practiced a couple times, then when he turned on the camera, he could have just spoken to the camera and it just come out. And that's kind of what you need to do.
I think, you know, one of the things I watch what you do is you and I will strategize about what we want to put into a video. And I get the privilege of working with you and planting seeds and thoughts in your mind. And it's fun to watch them germinate and grow. And then I see you sit there and the one takes, you take most of your videos are done in a single take. It's because you've done that process of thinking about writing out kind of what you want. But when you get in front of the camera, it comes out and it just flows so naturally and organically. I love that. And before we get off this topic, let's run around to any of the regulars that have. Did you want to add something to that, Scott, that comment?
I say it's not me. I've just done a bunch of videos. Once you've done a few, you forget about being nervous, and you just talk, and it's easy.
Yeah. Andy, you know, I always try to get you in front of a camera.
Well, that's good, and I'm happy to do that. So the Andy 10 years ago and the Dave 10 years ago were very, very different. I over-prepared, wrote everything down, and Dave pretty much winged in everything. And the Andy and Dave you're talking to today are kind of meeting in the middle. So
that's right.
There is some level of preparation that goes by, and I am good with extemporaneous more than I ever realized I would be. Thank you, Mr. Licken. But Scott, I know you've been working with Dave for a long time. How much preparation is enough? Is it 15 minutes practicing?
Question.
Is it an hour? Do you write out a script? Do you just give bullet points? How much is enough?
You know, I think the way I would answer that is to say you should feel like you know what you're talking about. I mean, I'm the last person on this call to call themselves an expert. I'm not an expert in anything, but I know when I have an opinion. So I recently, Dave gave me a good idea. Why don't I do a series of short videos about tips for people who are considering switching mortgage companies? And I taped 35. Dave was at the studio one day. What I had written down was a list of 35 ideas. And I think in 45 minutes, I taped the first half of them. And I came back a day or two later and taped the second half. So it doesn't have to take long if you have an idea and then you just say it on camera.
Very good.
Yeah. Alice, when you're a person, I think you would be just so natural at doing videos. What's your thoughts and any questions you have?
Yes. Well, thank you for saying that, Dave. But, you know, as long as the camera's far away, I'm fine. So the, which means my arms are not long enough to get it far away. Anyway, so Scott, I love that. I love the thought of the preparation. My question is then, okay, I get over that hump. I get the preparation. What do you see are the best delivery modes, methods today to really reach the audience that you want on the mortgage space? Because I think a lot of people feel like, oh, it's been done already or it's being done. Am I just posting it on YouTube? You know, so you get the video done. Now what? Any tips there?
Well, yeah, I think first I would say know who you're trying to talk to. For example, I'm a CEO of a mortgage company. I'm not talking to borrowers, typically. There are some cases I am, but typically I'm talking to industry professionals. So a lot of things I do end up on LinkedIn or on blogs that are specifically for industry professionals. If you were a loan officer, you should always, I mean, think back 25 years ago, 30 years ago, you should be building a network. That hasn't changed. So if you're building a network, today it's probably through Facebook and other channels like that, then deliver these helpful tidbits, the little video ideas that are, as the previous person said, entertaining, kind of fun sometimes. Deliver that to your regular network. But I know Dave will want to jump in and say, never advertise yourself.
Yeah,
you know, I
yeah.
mentioned that we
you don't have to.
Tips. I don't have any tips that say, if you're considering a mortgage company, be sure that they have fast underwriting. By the way, Open Mortgage has great turn times. I would never throw that in there. All of those tips are things that I sincerely believe people should think about when they're switching companies. And if I can gears, for all your listeners, if you go to LickinOnLending.com, there is a contact us button at the top of the screen. You could send a message to Dave and tell him that Lickin' on Lending could be a live stream and not just a podcast.
Yes. We're working on that. Yeah, that's a good point because we're thinking about doing that. That's getting more and more. I'm getting so much more feedback. Like, again, time to do a live stream of this. And so I think Facebook Live is going to be one of the things it's in our future. It's coming, Scott. We'll be there, and it'll be a lot of fun. Alan, I'm looking at the time advance, how fast the time goes. Alan, real quick, any questions? And then Joe, about this segment?
Well, you know.
Part of it, this thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Scott, good to chat with you again. I know we chatted about a month ago. You know, my background is broadcast TV, and I used to direct a live 30-minute newscast, and I have to tell you, we practiced all week long. We read off the teleprompter, well, the folks did, but it took the entire week to put on a 30-minute program. So, Scott, I think what would be really interesting, there's a lot of people doing video right now and a lot of different things. It would be great if you did a behind-the-scenes. So even if it was just on an iPhone, actually tape what's being taped, and maybe that'll provide some inspiration for folks. And, David, we could post that on our site and help to this this recording, you know, learn a little bit from Scott. Scott, I wanted to ask you your thoughts on live video compared to pre-recorded. I know you mentioned earlier, you know, we could do like, or David, you mentioned Facebook Live. But
Facebook Live.
Scott, what do you think the effects of live video are?
I'm not sure I understand the depth of it. We do one. Every month we have a field sales call for all of the loan officers, branch managers to dial into. We live stream it from our studio. We have two cameras. I have one person work sound. I have one person work the cameras. And I'm sort of the host like Dave. So I'll discuss a little and then I'll say, let's go to Greg Block, the head of ops. And
sure.
They'll switch. He'll be in another chair. They switch to Dave, to Greg. So the live thing, we don't spend all week preparing, so ours is imperfect, but that particular thing is to all of our employees, so that's okay. I think live is going to happen more. Off when I'm not on the broadcast with you, I will tell Dave behind the scenes that live is harder and real stuff does happen and break. real time. But I do think, you know, it's going to be out there and more prevalent.
I know you're a big car fan. We spoke briefly about cars, and I think, you know, adding some personality or humanizing the content sometimes is good. So let me know when you maybe want to hit the road and do a live broadcast of test driving some of your cars. I'd love to be there.
He's got the coolest Tesla there exists. It is so much fun, and it'll throw you back in the seat. Joe, what you got? Any questions?
Yeah. You know, as you try to keep a video short, and I'm going to keep this question short so you don't hear a dog barking in the background. Is there a formula that you go by, you know, that seems to work best?
I don't, other than in try to keep videos short, certainly that's really important. You could tape a video and have it be 3 or 4 minutes and then just cut out mercilessly and get it down to 2 and then cut out mercilessly again and get it down to 45 seconds to a minute. You can always be more concise. I like to start a lot of my videos with a question, which is kind of teeing up what it's about, depending on who the audience is. Or the other thing, if I'm putting it out on LinkedIn or somewhere public, I'll have marketing create a graphic with a question so that if it's in your LinkedIn feed and it's scrolling by, you read those words and you know what it is. So you can say, oh, wait, I want to stop and listen to this. If it was in a feed and it started with a frame that's just my face talking, well, why stop and listen to that? So I would consider that, you know, is there a way you can give the listener a cue of what it is if you're going to be putting it out in social media so they can decide they want to look at it?
That's good. I love that. That's actually a good idea. There's two approaches. The one that you're putting out that you do on your website. For folks, check it out, openmortgage.com. Look at all the videos, hundreds and hundreds of videos, over 700, nearly 800 videos he's done. I want to move on to the next topic, and I just want to touch on this briefly so we're not going to go around the horn on the next two topics. But something that you're doing that's really making an impact in your company is becoming more efficient. You've really focused on that. How important is becoming more efficient, which is the second strategy we're talking about? Just briefly touch on that because I want to get to the fourth one, which is the money side of the formula.
Well, that, you know, it's interesting. I'm kind of an anti-believer in efficiency. I mean, you have to be efficient. And if you think a market is slowing down, it's a great time to say, are we wasting money in this place or that place? Because certainly any money you don't spend, then you don't have to earn. But I also believe you can't try to cut your way to big profitability.
So true. Yeah, it helps, but it is not the path to, you know, turning the company around. Production is, and the products you do. That's so true. That's a really good point. Keeping it in balance is what you're saying.
And thinking about your four points, there's another thing I would just throw out for people to think of in their own life. When we talk about these three or four different things you can do when you feel like a market is down, all of these ideas we talk about, they're actually great to do when a market is up. You know, when things are going great and you're rushing and you say, we need more processors, hire an underwriter. But that's also a good time to stop and say, hold it. You know, are we over hiring? Is it really that we need more people, or have we acquired some people who aren't the best fit, who shouldn't be here?
Which really goes to my third point, which is getting the right people on the bus and the right people off the bus. And it's going to the good to great, Jim Collins' famous book. So you've done a fair amount of that. You're not afraid to make changes. You treat people. You care about your people. I think that's one of the things that's a hallmark of you and Tana, who run the company. You really care about people. So getting the right people off the bus is a painful process, which means spend the time to get the right people on the bus at the beginning. What tools do you use? I know you wanted to use one particular tool I'm a big fan of.
The one particular tool, I don't know. There's Insights Discovery, which is a personality.
That's the one I want.
Well, I use two. The other one is the APQ from Asher Strategies that really look at how someone's personality matches the role you're going to put them in. I heard a recruiter speak 5 years ago. His name's Brad Remillard, owns a big recruiting company. And he said, put people in the role that you're hiring them for. And what he meant was, many of us make the mistake to say, I need a processor, need to have 4 years experience, needs to understand whatever, FHA. And then we hire the first person who has those minimum things we were looking for. So we actually hired the minimum acceptable person. Instead, you should interview pretty extensively, talk to people a lot, and ask them questions related and discuss what you will be having them do, not what they did in the past. So you get away from accidentally hiring the minimum person. And the way I like to say it around here, we just hired a new head of technology. And when we were looking, I said, remember to my senior staff, we have to be in love. We're not looking for somebody who's going to be adequate. We want to find somebody who really complements the team.
That's good.
It's too easy to be in a hurry to hire.
Yeah, I think we throw bodies and we do it too quickly and we don't take the time. And that's where I love Patrick Lencioni's book, The Ideal Team Player. It's a great book. A great read on this, and it's involving everybody, especially the further up in the organization you go, the more it has to be about the team. Let's get over to the topic of reverse mortgages, and I want to bring the whole team back on, our regulars on, and to talk about that, because the reverse mortgage is a product that, quite frankly, is one that not everyone is taking advantage of. Demographics, other than millennials, won't be taking advantage of it, but their parents will be. And it's a powerful tool. Talk about that, and then I'm going to go to Alice. I'm going to have her ask some questions, then to Joe, Andy, and Alan. All right.
This came up because you said, you know, what do you do when markets are down? And I think you have to look at not the overall the market is down, because every market there's the 780, 800 FICO borrowers who live on the great side of town, and there's borrowers who are 617, and you're going to have to help them improve their credit. And there are first-time homebuyers who don't know anything, and then there are seniors who need a reverse. When you talk about the market being down, you really have to stop and pay attention for, is it down? And are the segments and the products I deal with, are they down? You might want to look at, if I dealt with people who are doing bond loans and people who are move-up, I would start shifting my marketing to the move-up people from the bond people. So in that context, if you do traditional loans, you ought to also be thinking about reverse, because the demographics say there's going to be more business in that space, and because the economics, I mean, you always have to be looking at ROI, right? We talk about putting videos out on Facebook or wherever, you can buy AdWords, you can do all these things to promote yourself, but anything you do, you better know what the ROI is.
Good
different
point.
Different channels that you might emphasize, again, my bond borrowers, 617 FICO, or my move-up borrowers, or reverse. The margins these days are still quite a bit better in reverse. So it's just another product. If you think the market's down or you're looking at how do I expand profitability, you ought to compare that with the products in your mix.
That is really good. Alice, has any questions come to mind as you look at the reverse mortgage strategy and it's what you're seeing in the market that you would have for Scott?
Yeah. Hi, Scott. So on that front, though, you know, it does seem to be a product, too, where there's limited expertise out there. So, you know, your competitive environment is very different. Is that a reflection on how much business is also out there and trying to overcome the negativity of reverse mortgages?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of loan originators who originate reverses are old enough to have one. It doesn't need to be that way. One of my biggest branches or biggest producers of reverse is a husband and wife team in their 30s. And they were traditional mortgage, and then they added reverse. But I think part of this reason that I'm trying to get more people into that part of the industry is because some of the people who have been doing it are kind of retirement age, and they're ready to do something else. I don't think a reverse is harder than a traditional mortgage. In some ways, it's easier. It's not a full credit underwrite. It is different. And I also would say to people, just like I would say, don't go, if you work with realtors, don't think that you're going to buy LendingTree leads and grow your business that way, because it's such a different thing. If you're going to do LendingTree leads, you got to focus on that. So if you're doing a lot of business traditional, I wouldn't think that in 1 hour a week, you're going to add reverse. It takes more dedication to at least understand the product and understand the ways to market it and, you know, to get to a certain level of expertise if you want to be good at it. And that's not reverse. I'd say that about any product. But
good point. Andy.
Yeah. I got lots of questions. He's so smart. So, Scott, a long time ago, I'd go fishing with my grandfather, and he'd always tell me, follow the fish, not the fisherman. Fish where the fish are, not where the fishermen are. So how do you look around the corner? You know, how do you find and build this new avenue? You're kind of talking theoretically about, well, if the market's dropping, doesn't mean all the market's dropping, just maybe means your draw market's dropping. So how do you get there? How do you find the place to be?
I love that expression. I've heard it other ways, but I've never heard it that way. We're kind of looking at that ourselves. I think one of the areas that is going to happen, you know, so historically the reverse mortgage was considered a product of last resort. I mean, mom or dad or grandpa or grandma has literally run out of money, but they have equity in their house. But we also know that it's a great planning tool. And once a financial planner understands it, they can use it pretty effectively. So I think that sort of the fortune teller aspect of it is saying that there's more market out there that hasn't been very well addressed that is not the dire needs borrower. It's the financial planning borrower. And there are
great points.
Yeah, Wade Fowle wrote a book. He's P-F-A-U. And John Salter, they're both financial planners. They're both PhDs. So you would like them. They're your kind of folks, Andy.
Yours too, Scott.
But they wrote books on how you can use it as a tool. So, you know, I wish I had a little more magic because I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, that's what we need to do is to be able to tell the future. Where are the borrowers going to be? But I do think it's not as much the needs-based borrower. That will always be there to some extent. But to really broaden the base, it's going to be the financial planning borrower.
Wow,
yeah,
that's
really good.
Cultivate that.
Andy,
great,
you've got
Scott,
a great story. I wish we had time to go into your in-law story of how they used a reverse mortgage as an effective financial planning tool. I mean, it's just really powerful, or at least they consider. I don't know if they actually did it or not, but it's really good. As we wrap this up, let's run over to Joe and Alan. Joe, any questions?
Well, Scott, you've mentioned that the margins are good. I don't know if you want to disclose this, but do you mind saying how good they are?
Reverse mortgages can either be a fixed rate, which is if you're on a comp plan for a traditional mortgage, your fixed will be Reg Z limited to the same. But ARMs are a non-Reg Z loan, and they're in round numbers, say a loan officer would make twice as much as they would on a traditional loan. The investors have a big appetite for reverse mortgages because they're equity-based and they're insured typically, so it's driven the spread up.
Okay. Well, let's, Alan, as you wrap it up, any thoughts?
Absolutely.
What is this, the Grill Flash Show?
The Grill Flash Show. Yeah, by the way, when you have the name Scott Gordon, what do you think your nickname is? Yeah, Flash. Okay, go ahead. So shoot.
Alan. Scott, I think you know what I'm going to ask you. How does technology play a part in making reverse mortgages doable?
Didn't see that one coming.
I've been thinking about it. Well, Dave knows that I have something that's coming out in, I hope, 6 or 8 weeks. I'll be back on the show and talk about it. But I've been looking at how do I use more technology. Dave mentioned this hour-long video about the disruption of the energy markets, which has to do with electric cars and solar and autonomous driving. And the two big drivers there are technology and automation. And I believe in mortgage, those are going to be the two big drivers, technology and automation. And if you don't try to run as fast as you can and try to catch up, you are going to get mowed over.
Yep. That's exactly what I said. And you've got great technology going. Alan, good question. I anticipated that was going to be your question, knowing you. And I made you watch that video. I said, begged you to watch it. You're like, arg, do I have to? And it's great responses, feedback. And Alan, your feedback is great. We're going to spend a whole program talking about that video and the coming disruption. Scott, I want to say thank you so much for coming on. We just scratched the surface on this one. So anyway, we're thrilled to have you here and appreciate it. Check out Open Mortgage. You can meet Scott in person by watching hundreds of videos on their website, openmortgage.com. Appreciate the partnership, the client ship, the adversizer ship, all the ways we relate and work together. It's good stuff. And, folks, you want to get to know Scott. Get a hold of him. So, Scott, for those that want to get a hold of you, what is the best way to do so? What would you prefer?
My email, I guess, scott@corpopenmtg.com. To see examples of videos, they could go to openmortgage.com/tips.
Tips,
and they could
yes.
see some of the videos. But there are tips for looking for a new company.
36 tips he came up with when I pushed him and encouraged him to go do that. It's a good job on that. Appreciate you all joining in with us. You, our listeners, as well as want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, ArchMI, Black Knight, Motivity Solutions, Open Mortgage, MBA, Predictive, Lenders One Mortgage, Cloud of Elman, Knowledge Coop, Tom Slyker, Broad Street Consulting, Card Tab, and Vidyard. Thank you all for making this program possible. Look forward to having you back next week. And, folks, we want to hear from you. Go to the website, lickinonlending.com. Love to hear from you. Sign up for it. If you're not getting the notifications about the podcast, you can do so by you can get the notifications by watching that form that pops up, kind of obnoxiously pops up right in your face. Anyway, have a great week. Next week, we hope to have on Mike Frattantoni of the MBA going through the latest MBA statistics and information about earnings or the lack thereof. Anyway, we'll be talking about it. Have a great week, everybody. See you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Thanks for listening.